Translation and Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Like a cloth woven of threads extending for its length and breadth, this entire universe, in all its latitude and longitude, is situated under different potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of the Lord, and thus he represents the Super Soul in the embodied soul. He can sustain your forceful waves on his head. Purport by His Divine Grace, the A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Can you hear me? You sure? Can you hear at the back? It's loud and clear? Because it's sometimes hard to tell when you've got the microphone. You know, if you speak loud, you don't hear what it's like. If you speak soft, you don't know if it's loud enough. So if you can't hear, please let me know. Of course, there's more to hearing than just the, let's say, the, what is it called? Technically, anyways. Hearing is a bit more than just physical exercise, but that's the beginning. At least we have to open up the channels and try to hear the subject matter. We have to go deeper than that, but anyway, at least we start somewhere. Translation. We've read now purport. The water of the Ganges is supposed to rest on the head of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sustains the entire universe in different potencies. Lord Shiva is described in the Brahma Samhita 5:45. Shirang yatada divikada vishesha yogat sanjayate nahita tak pitagasti heto Yaksham bhutam apitata samupaiti karyad Govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Milk changes into yogurt when mixed with a yogurt culture. But actually, yogurt is constitutionally nothing but milk. Similarly, Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, assumes the form of Lord Shiva for the special purpose of material transactions. I offer my obeisances at Lord Govinda's lotus feet. Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the same sense that yogurt is also milk, although at the same time it is not milk. For the maintenance of the material world, there are three incarnations, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is Vishnu in an incarnation for the mode of ignorance. The material world exists predominantly in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, Lord Shiva is compared here to the longitude and latitude of the entire universe, which resembles a cloth woven of threads extending for both its length and breadth. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. A wonderful subject matter about Lord Shiva. Sometimes we put him in the background a little bit. Sometimes we almost talk semi-derogatory. Not exactly, but, you know, in some kind of way. Here we see Lord Shiva being And say, Srila Prabhupada is putting him in his rightful position. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what Prabhupada says here. We'll talk about that a little bit later on if we can, because our time frame is quite short. Today is the disappearance day of Srila Sranga Thakur. And I remember going back to earlier days, I suppose, in contact with Krishna ISKCON movement, that when these days would come up on our calendar, which they come up quite frequently, many of us have never heard of them. Nowadays, days come up on our calendar, even this year, for instance, I was in one temple. Nobody even mentioned in the announcement that it was Rupa Goswami's appearance day. What to speak about, talk about him. We used to, even though we knew nothing about these personalities, we would just say, today is the wonderful, the glorious appearance day or disappearance day of so-and-so. Today we're having a festival. And that meant extra kirtan and a feast. That's all it was. Nobody, when, at least at that time, knew anything about Sranga Thakur. Right? Even now, I doubt whether everybody here is familiar with Sranga Thakur. Maybe if you come from Scotland, you may know Sranga Thakur Das, but or maybe you've got another Sranga Thakur here, I don't know. Probably somewhere in the community. But we have to, you know, connect to our roots. And how we connect to the roots is by the mercy of these personalities who Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes by hearing about their path, the path that they show, their, which includes their pastimes. One can actually develop the confidence and the determination which is required in devotional service. So I'll just speak a little bit, if some thoughts come to mind, about Sranga Thakur, if nothing else, I hope, for my own purification. If you have been on Navadvip Parikrama, many of you have been, I would imagine, you may go to a place called, do you know where? In Modrumadvip. There's one village there where Sranga Thakur used to reside. You know what it's called? Mamagachi. There's a temple there of Madan Gopal. There's also a deity of Radha Gopinath and Gaur Gadadhar also there, as well as Jagannath. If you go there, you'll see this place, a very holy place. It's Modrumadvip. And that's where, that area is where Sranga Thakur would reside. He had different names. Srangadhar, Sranga Murari Chaitanya, different names he was given for different reasons. He would perform his bhajans there, and at night, in the evening, he would cross over the Ganga to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the kirtans in Mayapur. An exceptional devotee. Prabhupada describes him as the 77th branch of the Chaitanya tree. He's also known as Nandamukhi Gopi in the spiritual world. Not so much. I don't know much about him, and I haven't seen too much about written about him, but there's probably a lot more. But he was exceptional. But he made a vow that he would never take any disciples. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one day after he'd admonished Devananda Pandit, Devananda Pandit had offended Srivas Thakur. On his way back to Mayapur, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Sranga Thakur. And he said, why haven't you accepted any disciples? Sranga Thakur replied, I haven't met anyone suitable. He said, Lord Chaitanya said you should accept disciples. He said, all right, the first person, and he said, Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry, you may not offend anyone suitable, but whoever you choose will become suitable. So he said, all right, then if you so desire, I said, the first person I meet tomorrow, I will give initiation to. So early morning, he was taking his bath. And as he was taking his bath, a dead body floated by. It was a small boy. They don't cremate small boys. To a certain age, they put them on the Ganga. So he saw the small boy and initiated him. And the boy started to come back to life. When he heard the mantras, he started to give him the initiation mantras. And the boy started to come back to life and regained his consciousness. And then started to say who he was. He was a Brahmin child who got bitten by a snake. He was supposed to have been initiated the day before. And he said, my name is Murari. He said, actually, I am your eternal servant. So that was his first disciple. Maybe he took more. Unusual first disciple. He literally gave him birth. He came back to life. And his parents came running after when they heard that he'd come back to life again to take him back home. He said, I'm not going. I'm the eternal servant of Saranga Thakur. I'm staying here to serve him. So he remained there in the service of... Therefore he got the name Saranga Murari Chaitanya, because he brought Murari back to life, gave him initiation. He was quite eccentric personality in some ways. Some that said that he would chase tigers around. He would treat them like pussy cats and chase them and tease them. When he would see a poisonous snake, he would start playing with it. He would sometimes go under the water for many days and not come up, but he would be completely undisturbed. He wasn't of this world. He was one of the many eternal associates of the Lord who come into this world to participate in the Lord's pastimes and give their association. He was one of those personalities. And one time when Lord Chaitanya was returning, Lord Chaitanya would, in Vijayanagara, he would go to school there, and on his way back he would sometimes pass Saranga Thakur's residence. The Lord saw that in his garden, I suppose, there was one bako tree, and the bako tree was dying. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Saranga, don't you know this tree is dying? Aren't you going to do something about it? Said, my Lord. He said, what can I do? This tree will only survive by the mercy of the Lord. There's nothing I can do. So then Lord Chaitanya embraced the tree, which was almost dead, and he embraced the tree and it came to life. Basically, it came back to life. Although it was completely hollow, to this very day the tree is hollow and it's flourishing. We see this with bako trees sometimes. Haridas Thakur also, same thing there in Siddhabako and Puri. But Lord Chaitanya gave that tree, it's 500 years later, still growing. By the mercy of the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can become immortal. Not necessarily on the physical plane, but we can reach that platform. So there's just a little something about Saranga Thakur, not much. To today's subject matter about this interesting verse about the position of Lord Shiva and how important he is. I used to think, well, I still do, I suppose, that Lord Shiva is very important in our endeavors to become Krishna conscious. He does appear in Chaitanya Lila in different forms, and one of those forms is the combined combination with Mahavishnu and Lord Shiva, who appears as Advaita Acharya, part of the Panchatattva. So in that sense, he's an important part of our devotional practices, of our services. But more than that, what's the biggest problem in one sense? You could answer that in many ways. That we all have the, in one sense, the original kind of like, well, original goes even further in one. But within this material framework, what's our biggest problem? So, good answer. Or maybe you're putting two and two together. False ego. I don't know if anyone here has any false ego or not. Anyone got any? No. I don't have any false ego. What are you talking about? I'm a devotee. We may have some false ego. Let's give the... we may be some pure souls are amongst us here. But we may have a bit of false ego sometimes, huh? What is false ego? That's interesting. I definitely don't. He's right next to me in the heart. You could definitely say that that is, in reality, that's the that is what it is. An other practical perspective. Yes, Amila. Are you? You're God. I don't think like that. Just do what I say. I met one time, I was talking to one temple president. And I said, Prabhu, if anyone else ever wanted to open a temple, a qualified person, I wasn't talking about, you know, some jerk. But if anyone else wanted to open a temple in this city, would you be, you know, in favor of that? And he said, of course I would, as long as I do what I tell them to do. I gave up. I thought, there's just no point pursuing this one. Yeah, a little bit self-centered. The real ego is to see Krishna in the center, isn't it? And taking both points. To see everything in relationship with Krishna. So it takes a little while to even to digest that sometimes. What to speak of, what to even eat it, what to speak of digest it. Yeah, it's seeing ourselves in the center is basically the position of basically everyone in this material world. Different degrees, different coverings of nature. Lord Shiva is that principle of the false ego. He can also release us from that false ego. Take out a thorn with a thorn, as we sometimes hear. So how do we do that? He is also, he represents various principles here. He's a Supreme Lord, but for the sake of, it's a thankless task, we could say, of the jivas being imprisoned, using that word, you could use different words, in this material world, being conditioned, placed, by the glance of Mahavishnu into this world, and by the influence of Lord Shiva becoming overwhelmed by false ego, and by his consort becoming bewildered and illusioned by the active effect of the three modes of nature. They're all completely interrelated. It's just the Lord taking different roles, even Brahma, doesn't have any independent capacity to create. He's not like, you know, he's become a Superman. He's just the, you know, suitable. you can say, vehicle or instrument through which that creative activity takes place, but the actual creative potency is none other than Krishna himself. So he's also considered to be an incarnation. Lord Shiva is a little different, as we generally understand. He's in his original form as in the spiritual world, of course, he resides there as a form of Lord Narayan and Sadashiva. But that particular transformation, for that particular purpose, so when they take that purpose in this material world, it's like if you take the position of a king, you have to act like a king, whatever we are. You can't act like a saintly, but you can't act like a saint. You can't take the role of a saint or a Brahmin. You have to play the part. So the Lord is also, in that sense, playing these parts in different forms. So it's transformation of milk into yogurt by contact with some, whatever it may be, tamarind or some, substance that transforms there for the sake of the material creation. So from Mahavishnu himself come, of course, the Mahatattva, the material elementary principle of creation in the form, starting to take subtle form. And then in time, which again, Lord Shiva also represents time, agitates the Mahatattva. And activities or movement comes into place. And, according to Jiva's desire karma, Jivas are impregnated, and Lord Shiva's business is basically that aspect of false ego, forgetfulness of our identity crisis. And initially it's described in the second canto that the modes of passion, goodness and passion are more prominent, but by the Lord Shiva's arrangement or presence, the mode of ignorance becomes the predominating feature of material existence. And as Prabhupada says here, the same thing. Lord Shiva is compared here to the longitude and latitude of the entire universe, because everything in the universe is basically covered with ignorance. Everything, top to bottom. No matter how elevated we are, there is a degree of ignorance influencing every activity, decision, etc. Lord Shiva is Vishnu in an incarnation for the mode of ignorance. He has his part to be paying that part. It's not an easy job. The destructive aspect is there, the mode of ignorance. It's a deep subject matter, and that's just a little brief. More is described in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the creative, how creation comes into place, and so on. But I'm going to discuss something else regarding Lord Shiva. Maybe it was discussed yesterday, I don't know. I noted yesterday's verse particularly was discussing this subject matter of Bhagavata here. He is desiring that the Ganga, his relatives, of course, are dead, and only by the touch of the Ganga water will they be revived. So he's trying to bring the Ganga water to the earth planet. We may go back in history a little bit to the time of Bali Maharaj and how Lord Vamanadev, by the touch of his foot, how he penetrated the coverings of the universe, and the waters of the causal ocean entered into the universe, and that is known as the Ganga, at least on this plane, Bhagirathi. Waters which flowed into the heavenly planets. It's described that this at that time the Ganga had not flowed until Bhagirata's time to the earthly planets. It's taken a long, long time. It flowed very slowly, but it hadn't come to the earthly planets. It was Bhagirata who brought the Ganga to the earthly planets. But the, the force of the Ganga, she was very worried that the force would penetrate and pierce the earthly planets and go down to the Patala Lokas. So what to do? So we've just seen that Bhagavata suggests that Lord Shiva can take that water. So it's when the water comes from the heavenly planets to the earthly planets that Lord Shiva takes that water on his head. It's described by Lord Kapila, since this pastime is also related to Lord Kapila. Lord Kapila describes how Lord Shiva, Shiva also means auspicious, how Lord Shiva becomes still more auspicious because he takes that water which has washed the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. He takes that water upon his head. Bali Maharaj also took that water upon his head. To take that water of the Ganga, which is coming from the lotus feet of the Lord, place it upon one's head. As Lord Shiva, he placed that water above, even he has the moon crescent on his forehead, on his head. He placed the Ganga water above that, taking a position of humility, you could say. And it said, because that water, because rather the lotus feet of the Lord, they act like thunderbolts. And just as thunderbolts particularly destroy mountains, Indra's thunderbolt can destroy mountains, is it? That the lotus feet of the Lord act just like thunderbolts to destroy the mountain of sin in the heart of the meditative devotee. Therefore, we should meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time, as Lord Shiva is always meditating, basically, on the Lord's lotus feet. Now, that can be taken literal. Srila Prabhupada describes how this does act in a way that that meditation destroys the mountain of sin in our hearts. What is that mountain of sin? What is it? Comprises all kinds of different desires, attachments, which are born of false ego in contact with the material energy. Why what?
All the
vices, yeah. All numerous vices, you could say. Yeah. Numerous anartas, numerous tendencies, subtle, gross, which cover us, which we identify with, that's the false ego. They may be there. The transformation is not just the ones without, let's say. Like we see in the Upadeshamrita, how Vacho Vegam, Anasakrota Vegam, Diva Vegam, Uttara Pasta Vegam, these pushing senses are there. It's not in this material world that one is necessarily without them. It's becoming undisturbed by them, becoming unaffected, or say, not subservient to them. One may see them as whatever they are, whatever the causes of them are. But one is not obligated to be governed by them, whether it's lust or greed or whatever it is, anger. That's the position. Lord Shiva, undisturbed, he's also, there's no Dira, undisturbed, despite the attempt of Parvati, is not disturbed. We have to follow in the footsteps of Lord Shiva. To become free of this influences of the pushings of this material world, born of the false ego, all the various identities which we have and the attachments which we have and the attractions which we have in the different forms that they take. So he's recommending the whole process here is to meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord or upon the Lord in various ways. And that meditation, that taking that water upon one's head or following in the footsteps of Lord Shiva, who's known as the greatest Vaishnava in a sense, because he also, there's the prayers of Lord Shiva in the, what canto is that, eighth canto of Lord Shiva, beautiful prayers of Lord Shiva, and to Shankar Sham, said that the snakes which Lord Shiva wears are nothing other than Anantashesha. He represents Sankarshan also, but he worships Sankarshan when he appears in this world. The Lord and his associates sometimes appear in this world in various ways, and they may not act in their full capacity. Therefore, Shiva only has a certain amount of the capacity of Lord Narayan, because that's his position in this world. So he's taking that water on his head to show us that we should be humble and take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which means basically taking shelter of the Lord's devotees, taking shelter of the instructions which are coming down from the Lord. As the Ganga comes down from the lotus feet of the Lord, the instructions of the Lord, and the devotees are situated at the Lord's lotus feet, so their instructions are the same as the Ganga. They're coming down, and we have to take those instructions on our head with all humility. This will purify us of the false ego. By taking that water, the Ganga purifies us of our false ego. In practical terms, it means that we take the instructions of the spiritual master as our life and soul. And that purifies us of this. It takes time. And we see, I just kind of like try to see this, how devotees, wonderful, wonderful devotees, who do such wonderful service with their body, mind, and intellect, sometimes seem to stumble on the path. We all have our ups and downs in various ways, but sometimes stumble in such a way that we seem to fall off the path almost. And if you look at it, even if a person is engaged, their intellect and their mind and senses, pretty much as you could expect in devotional service, the false ego is the most formidable barrier. The most formidable barrier. This desire, this seeing ourselves independently of Krishna. This seeing ourselves in the center. And even though we're using our intellect, mind, and senses sometimes, it's still with that perspective of me being the doer, or me being the enjoyer, or proprietor, or whatever. It's dangerous. And, you know, if one does progress in spiritual life, it's only inevitable that one has to face that. You can't hide from it. You can't hide from it. We may want to, but we have to cross over that, you know, covering of the false ego. If we want to reach Krishna, we have to give up that false ego. Offer that to Krishna. Offer everything to Krishna. Offer our very existence to the service of Krishna through the agency of the pure devotees. Otherwise, we may be labeled a pure devotee, we may be labeled anything, but that doesn't mean that we are. As long as that false ego is still, as I say, influencing or still covering us, and the risks are still there. More risks in some ways, because one tends to get more praise, one gets more facilities, and so on. As King Priyavata prayed, pride, This pride is basically pride. He prayed that he never become affected by pride in the course of his duties. Lord Brahma prayed the same way in his duty of creativity. He not become affected by pride. I mean, imagine, we become proud when we make some little tiny nothing, little thing. We do a little thing in this lifetime, we can become proud. Just see what I've done. Imagine what it'd be like if we were Brahma. Just see what I've done. What else is there to do? You know, geez. Person gets proud when he has one little screaming little kid, you know. Or you make a little, you know, design a little house or something. You start the best design. It's just pathetic. The Lord Brahma, you know, he's got something to be proud of, you could say. Anyway, this is the danger, and we can bear this in mind, but you know, Lord Shiva represents that principle of false ego. So you don't see much. The prayers of Lord Shiva himself are there in Bhagavatam, and others, other statements are there, no doubt. He is important in our lives, and the spiritual master. He also appealed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or the Lord, to come to deliver all the conditioned souls. So we can please Lord Shiva by absorbing ourselves in the Sankirtan movement, trying to play our part of taking that water of the Ganga upon our heads for the benefit of all, as he drank the ocean of poison for the benefit of all living entities. Devotees also, to a certain extent, take on the poisonous effects of this material world for the sake of preaching. There's a beautiful story also in Ananta Samhita when Ganga Devi was so disturbed because of the oncoming Kali Yuga, and how she appealed to the Lord that she didn't want to remain in this world. She didn't want to come to the earthly planets. She didn't want to. She wanted to stay in heavens, especially in Kali Yuga. But the Lord said, don't worry. Yes, it's true, she said, that everybody simply wants to bathe in my waters and dump all of their sinful reactions on me. You know, why? I don't want, especially in Kali Yuga. The Lord said, don't worry, that I will be sending my Mantra Upashaka, the worshipper of my holy name, in this age. And if you... And they will come actually from all over, and he will go all over the world, and he will convert people into pure devotees. And they will come here to your waters, and they will bathe in your waters and relieve you of your distress. Not that we should get proud of that, but those are the words of Krishna. By the mercy of that Mantra Upashaka, the Mother Ganga Devi is pleased to flow within this earthly realm. So we should try to play our parts, try to absorb ourselves in following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, try to make that our life and soul. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. Any questions or comments?